Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I mean, if you had spoke to me whilst in my career, I probably wouldn't speak to you like this. I wouldn't say the things I'm saying. It's only because I'm a little bit mature. Well, I feel like I'm mature, a little bit wiser. And I wouldn't want that to happen to any youngster or adult.
Hello, everybody. It's me, producer Ross, and welcome to another edition of Ross Meets. It's series 2, episode 8. And as ever, in the intro, I want to say a big thank you to everybody who is listening right now and has listened to the series so far. Left me comments, left me feedback, and just general thoughts on the series. It's been a pleasure to bring you these during these weird times we've been living in. It's been great to catch up with former players, bring about memories during their time at the club, and you know what, speaking to different players that you may have not heard from before, and were waiting to hear from them, and it's just been great. And I just want to say a big thank you to all of you guys, because the listens that go on this series is fantastic, and you know what, you guys are great, and just thank you very much. So let's get into today's episode then and introduce this week's guest. And it's an absolute pleasure to be joined by former Town striker Marcus Bent. And this is a great chat. I really did enjoy catching up on Marcus. We talk about his career and his time at Town, from the ups to the downs and everything in between. And you know what? I was really pleased how open and honest Marcus was during this conversation. And a big up to him for just speaking to me and opening up about his time at Town and his career, of course his mental health and how open he is about that now. You know, it was a stigma when he was playing, but now he's very open and it's great to hear. And I do enjoy his Instagram stories. If you do follow on Instagram, he does some great stories on there, and it's great to hear he's doing all good now. And this was a really good chat. I really did enjoy it. Hope you guys enjoy listening. Let's get into it then. Let's get into Marcus Bent, his career and his time at Town. Let's go. Well, Marcus, an absolute pleasure to have you on, my friends. Thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, no, thank you for getting in touch. Thank you, whoever's listening. I hope you have a good time and get something out of it.
Definitely. So, you know, the current weird, strange times we're living in, how are you getting on with everything? You know, I know you've got a new little girl and stuff, and I've seen on your Instagram you've got some dogs, some very beautiful dogs. They keep me occupied.
Yeah. We've got two French Bulldogs. They are now a year and a half. And then we've just had a baby now who is 16 weeks. So it's a telling time. It's a hard time, especially with what's going on. So hence when you see me going out for a run or speaking to you guys, I'm just literally... And don't get me wrong, at times it's frustrating being in with... the family, because we're, you know, we're locked down for so long, and sometimes it gets a little bit tedious, a little bit frustrating, but to get out and have a run, and with my mental health and other people's mental health, it's just good to have your own time and get out and breathe the fresh air and just clear your mind, in a sense.
Where currently are you based?
I'm in London.
Okay.
I'm in London. I've travelled. They call me the traveller, as you know. Yeah. But my base has always been in London. But this is where I'm based and where my family and friends are. So yeah, this is where I am at the minute.
So that's where, you know, you're born in London. And, you know, did you always, what I normally do is I sort of ask, you know, about your early days in football. Did you always want to play football? Is that something you enjoyed doing when you were younger?
Not when I was at the age of 8, 9, 10. No, I was more into athletics. I used to run for my county, and I got called up to England to run 100 metres. It was only at the point about 13, I think. When I kind of, don't get me wrong, I played football, yeah. But athletics was my first and foremost. And then I saw Liverpool play and John Barnes, Peter Beardsley, etc. And I fell in love with it. I used to play five-a-side and go into secondary school. I got called up to play for the county, and then Brentford took me on to be a to play for them. So we used to train twice a week, and it was quite promising. They were quite confident within me. I was fast, I was quick, I was skillful. So it was a great time. It was a nice time, and the people, the love that they gave me, and the people behind me, and it just went on from there. Actually,
did you enjoy your time at Brentford? Was that a local club to you, or whereabouts in London?
Yeah, so I was born in Shepherd's Bush. If anyone doesn't know it, Shepherd's Bush is near Notting Hill Gate, where the carnival is held every year. Not this year, because of certain reasons. And I used to watch the likes of Les Ferdinand, MP, Simon Barker, goalkeeper, played for Arsenal, Seaman. So I remember going down to QPR and watching them guys with my uncle. So that was a good time, yeah.
Then your next move was Crystal Palace, of course, after your spell at Brentford. Uh-huh. And, you know, you're signing for a Premier League club. Steve Coppell was the manager, I think, there. How was that? You know, you're unfortunately, you suffered relegation in that season, but you did score a few goals in the Premier League. I think I saw one against Chelsea, one against Liverpool, Anfield, Stamford Bridge. What was that experience as a young lad scoring against these big teams?
I mean, before I go on to that, being signed up from Brentford to a Premiership side, I'm not going to be, as I say to, I don't know if you've watched my podcast or any interviews I've done. I'm a confident person, but I knew where I wanted to go. I was driven. I was tunnel visioned. And I wanted to make a success out of myself coming out of the background and where we used to live on a council estate, and my mum, you know, struggling, my dad working hard, and having four siblings to look after. It was a kind of a kick up the arse to actually do something in my life to actually make myself better. So playing for Brentford was amazing. Going to Crystal Palace was playing alongside of Tilio Lombardo, Bruce Dyer, Matt Janssen. I could name some more. But again, like I said, I've been so many places. Sometimes it's hard to think about names. But yeah, it was a great journey, great experience. It was hard. Oh, trust me, it was hard. There wasn't my mum and dad dropping me to games, and I used to have to get on the bus or get on my bike and ride to the games. And I worked hard for it.
So, you know, you suffer relegation there, and Terry Venables came in. Of course, he was the England manager just 2 years prior to that. So, you know, what was he like? And, you know, Steve Coppell as well, your early managers there.
Well, Steve Coppell was beyond his years, an absolute legend. He would talk to you. He was a man manager, brought you aside and instilled confidence within you. And then Terry Venables came in, who you just said, England manager. But before that, sorry, after that, he went over to Australia and managed the Australian national side. And when I came back from pre-season, when we got relegated, playing for the England under-21s, he brought in a lot of Australian players. And I got pushed aside, so it was frustrating for me doing so well and getting called up to England. I had an injury at the time. That's not an excuse, but it was a frustrating time, so I had to move on.
Then your next move was a sort of interesting one, Port Vale. Of course, Chris Palace have some, you know, administration issues and money problems and stuff like that. you know, did you have any say in your next move? Did you sort of like, you know, we're talking to different clubs and stuff?
Well, at that point, being at Crystal Palace, not being playing, and I wanted to go and progress in my life and my career. I'd never been outside of London. Or at that point, probably not really been abroad. I think I had two holidays, one to Spain with my current girlfriend at that time, my baby mum, who we've got a child with, who's 15 now. So long-term partner, but hadn't been outside of London, so it was scary to me. I'm leaving my family, I'm leaving my siblings, and I'm leaving my friends. So I remember going up to Stoke, Port Vale, and being scared. It wasn't a great time for me, but at that point, I was seen upon or thought upon as the next best thing or the next youngster that's coming through. So I had pressure on my shoulders and didn't quite work out. But
yeah, it must have been hard because the manager who signed you then got sacked, I think, you know, a few days later or something like that. It must have been hard, you know, your manager just signed you and put faith in you and now, oh, he's gone. So it must have been straight from the off. You must have gone, oh, you're the old manager's, you know, signing.
Yeah, he signed me. He was a good manager. I'll be honest, regardless whether it was him or anyone else, I just wasn't comfortable. I didn't click. I didn't hit the floor running. It was alien to me. I was living out of a hotel, which I've never done before in my life. And being the player that's come in on the big money signing, I wasn't mature enough or experienced enough to take that on board, I think, looking back. So it didn't go quite well for me.
Yeah. The next move, of course, Sheffield United, before, you know, Neil Warnock came in, before, you know, Adrian Heath, you know, did you think that was your next big move to sort of progress your career?
Well, getting the move to Sheffield United, Adrian Heath signing me, that was kind of a blessing in disguise. I went down there, saw the stadium. Again, big move, pressure on my shoulders. But I was full of a team of, and I'm not, no disrespect to Port Vale, it was a team of fantastic players. But I went to Sheffield United and that was a step up. But I'd been up north for a year and a half now, so I kind of got accustomed to it, accustomed to the language, accustomed to being away from my family, getting on the train, driving up and down the M6, etc. And going to Sheffield United, I hit the ground running. It was amazing. It's a club that I always hold dear to my heart. I was there probably about 8 months ago. Commentating on, I think it was Liverpool, Sheffield United, and I got a standing ovation, which was nice, which the fans appreciated me. I'm not asking for love, it was just nice that they appreciated me. So it's nice to go back and be amongst the Blades again.
You know, Neil Warnock then became manager. How is he? You know, I've heard some stories about him. How is he as a manager?
Neil's an amazing manager. I mean, I think that was his biggest club at that point. I think he came from Scunthorpe, I don't know. I'm guessing right now, but he came from a lower league team and he came in. He instilled a lot of confidence within me. We had Paul Devlin on the right, who literally I'd just give the ball to. He'd cross it in and I'd score a goal. We had a lot of good up and coming, I suppose at that time, academy players coming through, talented. Jagielka,
of course.
Jagielka. Again, so many teams. Remembering names, it's you know, no disrespect to them, but yeah. From that point on, I kind of raised my game. Got not so much more confident, but more mature.
Yeah.
and wiser about my game, and I kind of started learning the game rather than being a raw player that just goes and scores a goal by himself. So yeah.
Then your next move to Blackburn, of course, a few million back then. Graham Souness, of course, as the manager, you know, for yourself with price tags and stuff, what do you sort of think about that in terms of being this big money signing, you know, and stuff like that? How does that affect you?
Well, I think when you're young and you're moving and as a player, the price tags, I'm not going to say they affect you, but it's nice to hear. Oh my God, someone, I'm worth that much. The main thing for me is when Graham called me and he said, do you want to come to Blackburn to play alongside the likes of Craig Hignett, Matty Janssen again, who was at Crystal Palace, Damien Duff, Craig Hignett, Craig Short, Nathan Blake. Bloody hell. I mean, the squad that we had at that team, to go up into the Premiership was just awesome. That team could play in the Premiership all day long.
Yeah, that was the goal that season for Graham. You know, how was Graham as a manager? You know, once again, he is a well known player himself as a player. Now he's a manager, and he got success in that season. You know, when he signed you, so you proved that you were worth the price tag. You know, scoring them goals and helping them win the promotion to the top flight again.
Graham is my best manager that I've played under. He taught me how to go back to the basics. He taught me how to simplify the game rather than be eyeing the team. Sorry, not eyeing the team, but, you know, be a team member. And that in that year, we got promotion. We got promotion at Preston, who were our rivals, which was a derby game. I mean, there are times when a manager in all walks of life get on your nerves or you get upset with, and not just football. But one thing I say about Graham is I respect him, I love him, and he taught me how to actually play football the way it should be played.
You now back playing in the Premiership, and you know, you played a handful of games for Blackburn in the Premiership. You know, you're course a starter, and then the move to Ipswich came about. You know, when did you know, you know, when Ipswich are interested? You know, when were you told about that, and were you keen straight away? You know, of course, now moving back down south.
Well, I didn't actually play any games in the Premiership, I don't think, for Blackburn. I might have come on a sub and stuff, but Graham called me into the office and explained to me, he didn't tell me, explained to me that they want to bring in Andy Cole. Off of the season that we had, I thought my future was safe and guarded by playing in the Premiership. So I was excited. But he said to me, with your price tag and how well you've done, we want to bring in an established striker, which sounds really bad. But looking back now, he literally was just telling me my future's somewhere else. And I respect him for that, because he pulled me aside and he spoke to me. Don't get me wrong, I was angry at him and I asked to stay. I said to him, I want to stay and fight for my place. He said, no, this is where I feel your future is going to be present, and you're going to get your rewards. So we left on a good handshake, respectful handshake, and I went to Ipswich.
How did that talk come about? Did you know did you have an agent back then who was sort of saying these are the clubs that could be interested in you and stuff like that? Of course, back then there wasn't like a transfer window, was there? You could just sign.
No, there wasn't. No,
for any month. No. So.
No, there wasn't. The agent that I had at that point wasn't my agent that I had going forth when I joined Ipswich. Joining Ipswich was an amazing move. I'm not going to downplay that at all. I mean, playing alongside the Titus Bramble, Marcus Stewart, Darren Ambrose, Darren Bent coming through, Matty Holland being the captain, Herman Arrieson. It was a big step. But at that point, I got mature. I became mature and it wasn't just about me, it was about the team. So going into the training ground, I had, in a sense, not had to prove myself, but had to step up and be alongside these players and give the fans what they deserved.
Yeah. Of course, again, a big price tag, I think $3 million you signed for. You know, George Burley brought you in. You know, what was George like as a manager? You know, of course, it was sort of the end of his tenure at the club. Of course, we were, you know, that fantastic season. But how was he as your as a manager?
Oh, George was, again, above his coaching, managing years. He installed playing football within us, confidence within us. Again, I'm not going to lie to you, and I always tell the truth. And I always say this on Zoom or when I'm talking to people. We had our ups and downs, but I've always got respect for someone that tells me the truth, and I'll always go out there and give my all.
Was that, again, another thing, you know, as you said, you felt you were more mature now coming, playing in the Premier League again, and, you know, another big price tag, you joined it, which sort of players helped you at the beginning, you know, players you got along with really well at Town?
I mean, it was more so like Titus and stuff, like I kind of clicked with and made me feel at home. Again, being from London, it was an hour and a half drive. At times, I'd drive back and forth to go to training and stuff, but more so I'd live in Ipswich. But it was more so Titus and his family and his mum and his dad, actually, kind of. Brought me in and showed me love, so I felt comfortable where I was.
That's good. Then, you know, that price tag, you know, the first five games you didn't score. Were you worried about that at the beginning? You know, like thinking, oh, I'm not scoring at the moment. You know, did you just have to wait to get that click because you're joining the club midway for a season? Sure. What were you thinking at that point? You know, no goals yet in five games. You're a striker. You want to be scoring, but it's just not happening.
Sure. I mean, that's a long time ago. You're making me think now. Did I not score in five games? Oh, wow. Did we lose them games?
So I've got the stats up now. So your debut was against Borough. It was a 0-0 draw at the Riverside. Then it was a 2-0 defeat against Arsenal on Portland Road. Then a 1-0 defeat against Newcastle. 2-1 against Villa, and then 2-1 against Spurs, and then you, of course, scored your first goal against Leicester on Boxing Day.
Right, okay. I'm literally trying to think. Literally trying to think. Yeah. Okay. Of course you're gonna be concerned and worried that you're not scoring straight away. I think the manager bringing me in, he had to stick with me. I knew my skills. I think the players and the team knew my ability. I think going off the, maybe not so Borough, but Arsenal definitely. Newcastle at the time were a big side. So I think we knew our worth and we worked hard to get to where we got to. So scoring my first goal against Leicester, was that home or away?
Home. Boxing Day.
Was it home?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what? I'd love to see that goal because I can't remember it.
I'll find it for you, mate. Send it.
Oh, please do. Yeah. I can't remember it.
Yeah.
Once I scored against Liverpool, Leicester, I think I went on to get Premiership Player of the Month.
Did you?
Yeah. You know, sometimes it happens. Sometimes you just got to go with the punches. Sometimes it's not perfect. You just got to kind of cement your place and work as hard as you can. If you get yourself down, a little bit like what we're in now, COVID-19. If you get yourself down and beat yourself up about stuff, it's not going to work. So you got to be strong. You got to be effective and help your teammates. So that's probably what I've done.
Yeah. Of course, as you said, you know, in January you went on to score six goals, I think, in seven games, and, you know, of course you won Player of the Month. You know, what was, you know, can you, I don't know if you can remember, you know, story behind that sort of month where you were scoring and stuff, you really just feel the ball's just coming to you and you're just scoring at will?
I mean, always practicing in training, always working off what you know you can do, off your positives and negatives. Being at Ipswich, which are a technical club, At that stage, regardless whether it was 10, 15 years ago, that it was a footballing side with the players we had. So I think sometimes it's just, I don't know whether you or whoever's watching, you know, I'm going to say it. I call it flow mojo.
Okay, yeah.
So you just flow in. It's just, it's natural. You get the ball, your touch is good. Your awareness is good. Your confidence is good. And I just became a more mature player, wiser player, faster, quicker. And it just happened. If I could sell it, I would. But no one knows. It just happens when it happens.
Because, you know, you signed, I think, in November. So, you know, there was 2 months now for you to sort of, you know, make, you know, chemistry your player, you know, your teammates and stuff, and sort of have that bond, as you said, with Titus. So sometimes that's what you need. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, back then when the transfer window is open all the time, you know, it's hard to sort of hit the ground running straight away. But now, you know, now you have.
Yeah, I think, so you saying I signed in November, so that's like the Christmas period. And I always say the Christmas period is the worst period.
Yeah.
For any team, any player, that's when. At that point, we were playing Saturday, Tuesday. So it was, the games were coming thick and fast. It's cold, windy. You know, the fans are behind us, but they want us to win. So there's frustration there at times. And again, like you say, drawing, losing to Arsenal. There's frustration there. So scoring that goal against Leicester and then going on to, I think we won a couple of games after that, with the confidence boost within the team. And I think after that, that's when the likes of Darren and Darren Ambrose started coming through, who are legends in my eyes. I look up to them, they look up to me. We still speak to this day. So it was a good period of our life. Don't get me wrong, going down at the end of the season wasn't nice, but we worked as hard as we could to try and sustain and be as best we could within the team and for Ipswich.
How did that sort of affect you as a player, you know, getting relegated from the top flight? And did you, of course, you stayed at Town for another season, you know, in Division 1 back then. Sure. Is that always on the cards for you? Just thought, you know, I want to get this club back up.
I mean, you always want to be at the top. Going into the first division, it's taking a step back. But obviously, I'm contracted, and I want to work as hard as I can to get back into the Premiership. I think the scenario was, or the twist within that season was the administration within the club. I think that hurt us massively. It affected the players too. So, don't get me wrong, we all went out 100% and trained 100%, but it affected us massively.
How much do you get sort of told by, you know, the club about going to administration and stuff? Do you get told much about what's going on and update and stuff, or is it just sort of all in the dark and you just play?
I mean, me personally, we get told about it. We don't know the ins and outs. You know, we're getting paid and we're playing, and that's what we're paid to do. Mm-hmm. Me personally, it's not just about the team or the management. It's more so about the backroom staff, meaning the women or the men that cook us food and put our kits out. And, you know, I had a relationship with these people, and hearing that they're going to lose their job and you know, it's affecting them. You go home wondering, are they okay and stuff. You know, it might sound alien to you or to someone else listening, but that affects me. Mm-hmm. I promise you that affects me. So I was worried about that, and it didn't affect my game, but knowing what the club's going through, it affects your mental health, your how you want to go forward in within your career.
I don't know if you watched the Sunderland Till I Die documentary. You sort of see behind scenes on that, and you know, some of these people have been at the club for years and years, and now they get told, "Oh, sorry, mate, you've got to go because we can't, you know, pay you." And it's sort of like, it's heartbreaking.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. The only thing I can say, I've not watched it, but what I will say, and again, being at Ipswich when we went through that situation, it was heartbreaking. But what I try to say to people, what I try to say to youngsters, life's not perfect. And regardless whether it's football, rugby, athletics, your job, working in a supermarket, NHS at the minute, people are the government are laying people off. I mean, Virgin and British Airways, people are laying people off. That's life.
Yeah.
It's not nice, but I still have a family to look after. I still have my life to look forward to and go forward. So I can try and help as much as I can and support them. But was I affected 100%? Probably not, but they probably were. But I can only do so much.
Then, of course, George Burley got sacked and Joe Rule came in. What was your first reactions when George got sacked and then Joe came in? Do you know much about Joe? Of course, he was a legend at Everton, a club you went on to.
Yeah, of course. Well, I got loaned out to Leicester at that point and Joe came in. Mm-hmm. And he went on to do well, got into the playoffs. I done well at Leicester. We got relegated, Leicester, actually, but done really well at Leicester. Playing alongside of Les Ferdinand, Ian Walker, Brian Dean, legendary Muzzy Izzet, massive players within the Premiership, and playing alongside those again, and being back in the Premiership, it's a dream come true again. Ipswich going into the playoffs, I got called by the manager, and he said, can you come back? Do you want to come back and play in the playoffs and help us get up to the Premiership? Again, I'll be honest with you. I said no. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel being away from the club and away from the players and the team that I deserved to come back in. And not saying I would have got Ipswich up into the Premiership, but personally, I didn't feel it was part of my way forward. So hence why I said no. And I'll stick by that decision to this day.
Yeah. What was your relationship with Darren? You know, Darren Bent. You know, Darren, of course, gone on to have a fantastic career. But, you know, he straight away showed what he was all about in that town, you know, where he started. And, you know, you played alongside him a few times. You know, how was he?
Well, Darren came into training on and off alongside the likes of Ambrose. They clicked. Both of them clicked. Mm-hmm. They were like brothers. Yeah. It was
the two Darrens.
Darren Ambrose would see Darren Bent's run and they just clicked. I would say, and they would probably say the same thing, Darren Ambrose helped Darren Bent to get to where he got to this day and age. I promise you that now. His awareness and his skills, his technical ability was second to none. Being at Leicester and then we got relegated. But I scored against Everton. I think it was second to last game of the season. And then I thought I was going to go back to Ipswich, but Everton came in for me. So I moved on to Everton at that point.
Would you say Everton is your most successful time in your career? Of course, David Moyes brought you in. You finished fourth in your first season. How was David Moyes? Of course, he was still a young manager back then. What was he like?
Goal-wise, it wasn't the what I wanted. We played one up front at that time. I think we were the first team that year to play one up front. We played Arsenal the first game. They beat us 4-0. I didn't start the year before. Everton nearly went down, so the fans were in a raise. They weren't happy. But I think that gave us a kick up the arse, and we went on to do great things that year. We got fourth in the league, beat Liverpool after 5 years of not beating Liverpool. So being amongst the likes of Duncan Ferguson, Kevin Campbell, Tommy Gravison, Lee Carsley, McFadden, Richard Wright, who was at the club at that point, he wasn't starting, was again a great achievement and something. Tim Cahill, Leon Osman, yeah, it was a great achievement and something that and something I wanted to do in my career. Yeah.
Of course, you came in to replace Wayne Rooney. Of course, he went and joined Man United that summer as well. What was that sort of going? You know, did you get anybody say anything to you back then about, you know, you're now here to replace a superstar in Wayne Rooney? Of course, back then he was still coming up.
Well, I didn't. Well, no one said anything to me, but I knew I was coming in to replace Wayne. Yeah. I knew I was coming in to replace Wayne. So that was another, another notch on your shoulders. It's, you know, it's scary. Wayne was, don't get me wrong, at that point I was an experienced Premiership player. I knew how to score goals and play for Premiership sides. But Wayne at that point was on fire, going to Man United. I remember going into the training ground, and we called him Dog. But Wayne and I, we speak to each other now and then. But great player. But I had to replace him. The fans' probably expectations at me was, would I say, low? We've just brought up, how much did they buy me for? How much did they buy me for at that point?
450.
So replacing Wayne Rooney with a 450 grand player that's been at Leicester, who's just got demoted and going on loan from Ipswich to Leicester, I'm sure the fans weren't that confident, and I appreciate that. That's fine. But me being me, I'm confident. I knew that I could do well. And going into Everton, that was my pedestal. That's where I knew that when I could show something and do something for my career.
Yeah, and your next move went to Charlton, of course, reuniting with a few of your former teammates. Of course, Darren was there, Darren Bent, Darren Ambrose, Matty Holland was there as well. That must have been great to reunite with them, and now moving back to London as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, going into the back end of my career at Everton, I was frustrated. I wasn't playing. We just bought James Beattie in, who is a great player, but just didn't adapt to the formation that we played. So I wasn't playing as much as always on the bench. I wanted to, you know, start. My favourite goal for Everton is against Southampton, where we relegated Southampton. I came on, ball came up to me, I brought it down, Duncan played me and I put it top corner. But I asked for a move at that point, which made the move down to Charlton, like you say, playing alongside Darren and Ambrose and Matt Holland, Herman Arideson, Jason Yule, absolute English legends for me. And a lot of people watching, if they don't know them, then you need to go and watch them because they're absolute great players. Ben Thatcher, left back. It didn't go quite well for me at Charlton. I think I was still thinking about leaving Everton, the club who were my family and my friends and having a lifestyle up there. So the mental health and depression kind of clicked in, I think, at that point.
Of course, you know, back then there wasn't really much support for like mental health and depression. You know, were you able to speak to anybody, like close friends and family, or did you have to keep it sort of locked in because it was still sort of a stigma back then?
You just said the word, probably the stigma. I've been brought up to deal with my own problems and handling myself. My old man always used to say to me, and I can't swear on here and I don't want to swear, but he always used to say to me, man that up, son. So I think I probably suppressed a lot of feelings, maybe if I had a bad game. And even if I had a good game, we'd go and party and probably drink a little bit too much and suppress the feelings even more. So it wasn't a good time in my life. I didn't realise that until now. I can only speak to you now and actually relay that to you now. I mean, if you had spoke to me whilst in my career, I probably wouldn't speak to you like this. I wouldn't say the things I'm saying. It's only because I'm a little bit mature. Well, I feel like I'm maturer, a little bit wiser, and I wouldn't want that to happen to any youngster or adult.
Yeah. And of course, you know, back then, did you do many interviews? You know, because you had to do it for clubs and the paper and stuff, but is it something you sort of stayed away from? You just didn't really like, you know, you're happy to say, yeah, good result, blah, 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 but it's something you want to...
Well, I think at that point, I didn't read the papers. In my personal life, there was a lot of controversy and people telling me what I should do and shouldn't do. And again, it was me suppressing stuff and not being in the right space of mind and not being present, I suppose. So football kind of became second in my life, which is not a good thing at all, because football is the first thing in my life, which I love and adore. Hence when I say to people, respect the game, love the game, and listen to people and communicate with people, that's my confidence and, I suppose, not wisdom, but maturity now, where I can say that. But again, being paid a lot of money, being in the limelight, people wanting to know about your life and your career, sometimes it's hard being a youngster and not knowing what to do and where to go with it. So, yeah, I'm not going to say it was hard. Well, no, it was hard. But it's not an excuse. It was just the way of life, basically.
Would you say you come back to London, you know, did that sort of help you with your, you know, depression and stuff, you know, being around your family again and being close from home and stuff like that?
Oh, it was amazing to be back around my family because I only got to see my family and my siblings, my mum and dad. My mum and dad would come up occasionally, but just seeing close people in my life through school or just growing up through my life, seeing them kind of every other day or every day was nice. It felt calm and it felt cool. But I still had that hole in my heart where I wanted to be back at Everton.
Of course, you then returned back to the Premier League because you got relegated with Charlton, returned back to Premier League with Wigan, going back up back up north. Was that a club that you were interested in you from the off there?
Interested in me from the off? No, I don't think so. So we had Emil Heskey playing up front. Me coming in. They were in a relegation battle at that point. Mm-hmm. I went in there. I was top striker in the Premier League for about 6 months. I was on loan. We then scraped relegation and stayed up. I thought at that point I was going to get signed by Wigan, but politics, as you, whatever you want to call it within football, handshakes, didn't quite happen. So I ended up moving to Birmingham.
Yeah. because Steve Bruce was a manager there, wasn't he? And of course, reunited with Titus because Titus was at Wigan.
Titus was there too, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Titus was there too, yeah. Titus was there too. So again, at that point in my career, it wasn't me going into the change rooms and people not knowing who I was. They knew what I was about and what I could give to the team. My work ethic and being a professional. So we had some good times, but that year was hard. I remember last game of the season losing to Man United when they lifted the trophy, but we'd sealed our status in the Premier League. I think it was two games before that at Aston Villa. It was a good part of my life, but a sad part of my life because, again, I had to move on. Hence why they call me the traveller. So.
Then you said your next move was to Birmingham. I don't know if I got my fracture right here. You rejected Cardiff, I think, back then.
I did. I was on my way to Cardiff, actually. Again, as I am honest, as always, and I try to be honest, if anyone wants to hit me up and being honest, feel, you know, whatever, I'm here. Cardiff offered me double what Birmingham offered me. But I chose to go with Birmingham. Signed for Birmingham. Again, didn't go quite well. The rejection from Wigan, maybe suppressing stuff, maybe not feeling a part of anything. I got a couple of injuries, hamstrings mainly. At that point in my career, I was, like I said to you earlier on, I just wasn't, football wasn't the be all and end all. It was second in my life. It affected my football career and it affected my lifestyle too.
Yeah. Because from Birmingham, you had various loan spells out, you know, Middlesbrough, QPR, Wolves, Sheffield again. You know, it must have been hard for you to be travelling around all the time. Were you staying in hotels and...
I've been staying in hotels all my life. So, yeah. It got tedious. I always call it a cabin fever. So literally, it's nice to stay in a hotel, to get the food brought up to your room and clothes being in the wardrobe. I promise you now, most of my clothes are in the back of my car. I didn't have a home. I was always traveling. Speak to my girlfriend and my baby, you know, drive into training or drive into a game. My mum, my dad. But again, it was exciting at the start, being in a hotel, but it gets tedious at some point. And maybe people will look upon it and go, well, it was exciting and why are you so kind of down on what you've done? But living that life, it was hard at times. Being away from the family at Christmas, Boxing Day, travelling away, leaving my family on New Year's or them calling me on New Year's and calling down 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. And everyone cheering and me having to go to bed. And I had to be focused and positive about the game the next day. And again, that's what I chose as a professional footballer. So I'm not trying to throw that in anyone's face. But if you ever lived it or you did live it, then hopefully you can see what I'm saying.
Yeah. I just want to go into, with Birmingham, you left Birmingham. Did you, of course, you had a spell abroad. Did you have another club in England that were interested in you? Or did you feel, I want to challenge here and go abroad?
After being abroad?
Yeah. Going abroad.
Before going abroad? I went to AFC Wimbledon, actually, and I trained with them. At that point, I wasn't passionate about football. So going to... Mitra Kuka, which are based in Indonesia, Asia. I saw it as a payday, actually. At that point, I just saw holiday and retiring as the biggest bonus at that point. It sounds really fickle, to be honest. But it was just, I've got to a point where it was, do you know what, I just need to remove myself from this because it's affecting me personally and physically and mentally. So that was my choice. It was exciting to go to Indonesia. It was an experience and a massive experience. They treated me like royalty. But again, I think going up north in England and then going kind of halfway around the world, I missed my family. I missed and yeah, needed to come back. So my career, my contract ended. I had 2 years there. I ended my contract after a year with the language, the food. Hence what I've said on a couple of podcasts and Zooms. I now respect the foreigners that come to England, you know, change of life, change of food, change of language. And at that point, being a youngster, immature youngster, not really knowing their ins and outs of their career, I appreciate now and I understand it. So hands up to them.
Yeah. Did you go alone abroad, or did you bring your wife and stuff?
I went alone at first.
Yeah.
And then my daughter and my partner at the time came over, and they spent I think it was 6 months with me. And then we homeschooled my daughter. And then they went home, and once they went home, I think that was the kind of the time where I went, I've got no one here, in a sense. Hence why I made the transition, or I made the decision to go home.
Yeah. As you said, you were sort of treated as a king when you're over there. Like, what was the standard like over there? Was it not so great?
Well, no, I mean, I played alongside my team, but the likes of, or like Man City.
Okay.
So they played for Indonesia, the international side. So it was a good standard, but we would travel 2 weeks away, 2 weeks at home, and playing against other teams, the standard wasn't as good. I really don't want to say it how I'm going to say it, but I'm going to say it was corrupt. The lifestyle out there, it wasn't what I was accustomed to. I'm sounding spoilt now, in a sense where I've been brought up with nothing, so I'm okay with that. But it's just that I was accustomed to a little bit better than what was on the table, in a sense. And I mean, we used to stay in hotels where there'd be rats, snakes, cockroaches. we'd land on strips, like when we'd get flown to airports, where, you know, people just be laying and running on the kind of strip on the airport. I mean, unless you've been there, you can't really understand it. Baggage control, you wouldn't know where your bag is. It was just like a hut, in a sense. But that was a good thing about it. It showed me a different world and a respect for people that actually are in that environment. But I wasn't accustomed to that, and I missed my family after that and my friends, and I needed to come home.
So yeah, that's when you went, get me out of here. You came back, and did you know that was your football career sort of done now?
At that point I was done. Yeah, at that point I was done. I just wanted to come home and spend time with my family, and I didn't know what I was going to go into or succeed in. Just wanted to kind of lay back and think about what I was going to do. It didn't quite work out like that. I kind of got depressed. Mental health took over. I didn't know what mental health was at that point, and I don't think anyone knew what mental health was at that point. It wasn't today's topic like it is. The butterflies, which I used to get from day dot in my career, now I know what that was. That was anxiety. That was, you know, not being present. So I self-medicated and got into a couple of situations which would I take back? No. Would I like it to happen again? No. But I would never take it back because it's made me into the person I am today. And if anyone listens to my story and anyone can take anything from my story, I wouldn't anyone to go through what I've been through. Probably about 7 years now of my life. So talking to you and talking to people, I hope they take something from this conversation and this Zoom, basically.
Because, you know, some people, they'll read stories about you and stuff like that. And, you know, back, you know, when this is all going on, were you getting support? Were you getting, you know, your family and stuff and everything going on, you know?
Well, I think when you've got mental health and you're self-medicating, you push everyone away who you love or who loves you. So I felt I was okay. I went into rehab. I really didn't want to go into rehab. I thought I was better than that. I thought I was okay. I thought I could get past it by myself. My wife today, I wouldn't say dragged me, but she encouraged me to go into rehab and get some help. And it's probably the best thing I've done in my life. It's called Sporting Chance. It's not funded by Tony Adams, but Tony Adams started it. If anyone's seen Tony Adams' story, he went through the same kind of thing that I went through. So to get the tools and being alongside like-minded people in Sporting Chance helped me immensely.
I think I think you did on Instagram Live with David Cottrell, and that was sort of interesting because he had, you know, his addiction as well and stuff like that. And
yeah.
You know, is it helpful for you to know different players have gone through different things and stuff like that?
I mean, it's helpful knowing that you're not alone.
Yeah.
But really and truly, it's not just about players. It's about anyone that's like-minded or anyone that's been through it. I mean, when I went into rehab, we used to go to meetings every other day. At that point, me being, let's just say, I'm just going to say it how it is. Marcus Bent, the footballer that's played in the Premiership, I don't really want to sit in a meeting with Joe Blogg off the side of the street. That was my feeling. That's how I thought at that point. Going into the meeting, they didn't know who I was. They didn't care who I was. They literally spoke about their feelings, and it took a little bit of time, and I got comfortable, well, not comfortable with it, but I knew I had to take it on board and acknowledge it and be present about it and to help myself and my family. And those people, not being footballers or superstars, helped me do that.
You know, when you're going through all this sort of stuff, you know, were you reading anything like the newspaper and stuff? Because there's loads of stories about you and stuff like that.
I made a pact with myself never to read newspapers or the media. They make things into stuff that, and they put words in your mouth and make you out to be a bad person. I'm not a bad person. I'm a human being. I'm not a superhero. I'm a footballer and someone that's come up from being in a council estate to live my dream, actually. Yes, I've made mistakes. Yes, I could have made better decisions. But really and truly, if you look at anyone in the world from being, I mean, a top of the top, Michael Jackson, freaking Jay-Z, let's go into the Premiership. Let's talk about Ian Wright. Let's talk about Alan Shearer. We could go on. Everyone makes mistakes. And what I've always lived upon and lived by is people in a glass house shouldn't throw stones. Everyone has a down patch. Everyone needs support. But most of all, people need communication and someone to talk to help them through good patches and bad patches.
When you're going through all this stuff and mental health and everything, were you still sort of like following football and stuff like that, or was it that was sort of not on your mind?
Oh, at that point, I wasn't watching football or paying attention to football. Yeah. It was nothing that I wanted to be involved in. I kind of saw football as how do I see football? It just wasn't something I wanted to be a part of. But there was so much politics going on within football, a lot of money going on. I saw a lot of youngsters going through what I've been going through, and I had to just take myself away from it. Nowadays, I'm back involved in it, trying to get back involved in it. More so on the side of not coaching or managing, but more so helping youngsters or even professional players. Just to speak, communicate and move on from maybe a scenario or circle that they're in.
That's one of my last questions, is that, you know, what's next for Marcus Bent? What's your next goal in you know, your life? What do you think like doing? You now got a new young girl and stuff like that, and you've got another daughter as well. You know, what's your next step in your life?
Next step in my life is feeding her probably in an hour. Seriously, I want to be a part of the football environment, but I want to be a part of it in a positive way. Not saying coaching or managing is not a good way. I just want to make sure, or hope, or not make sure, but not preach, but maybe give something back. In a sense, where I went wrong, and hopefully the person or the player or the man or the woman doesn't have to go through what I've been through.
The good thing was, hopefully now with clubs, they do invite back former players. So, you know, you've said you've been back to Sheffield United. I'm sure you've been back to Everton. Have you been back to Ipswich since you've sort of left?
I've not. I think, again, me isolating myself and turning my nose up at football, people didn't really know whether I was amongst it or, I'm going to say, sane, I suppose. But as you see here, I'm talking to you. Yeah. And I'm sane, and I'm here, and once this situation's over, hopefully I can reach out. And I mean, I've been speaking to a lot of ex-footballers, Michael Dubry, Leon McKenzie, Clinton Morrison. I could go on, you know. So we're trying to put stuff together so we can help in the future and go forward.
That's one good thing about social media, because, you know, I found you on Instagram, and I thought, oh, that's a great opportunity to reconnect and, you know, catch up with you. And that's a good thing for, you know, as players as well, to sort of connect to fans, connect to their former teammates, because, you know, you lose numbers, you lose details of different things, and it's, you know, great. Definitely in these times we're living in at the moment, you know, social media can be a bad thing, but with this sort of thing, you know, me and you chatting, it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, you just literally put it on the line. Literally, the amount of teams I've been at, or the clubs that my ex-professionals have been at as well, you know, you do lose numbers. You have families, you have kids. I mean, we have each other's numbers, and we can get it just like that. But having social media and going through this, I think it makes it more so relevant, and that we actually support each other and support everyone else and help as much as we can. So social media is a good thing at the minute. I think it, well, not so much for my daughter, because she's always on social media. As you know, they're always on it. I'm a bit of a dinosaur when it comes to it, but it's a good thing to reach out and help other people in this sort of environment.
Well, Marcus, thank you very much for joining me. Is there anything else you want to add before we end this?
No. Thank you again for reaching out. As you're putting out, just be safe. You know, look after each other, and I'll see you soon.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.